Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 27, Are Hard Drives Getting Too Big? Here we go. Today, my guest is Greg Schulz. Greg, how you doing?
Rick, I'm doing fantastic today. And yourself?
Hey, I am great. I'm riding my bike to work. I'm drinking coffee. I think I'm actually hovering here on my desk. So
wait a minute. I can already visualize this. I mean, this is going to talk about a visualization going on a movie file. You're going to have a flip camera, a handlebar cam or something.
You know, that's a good idea. I could totally go all Mark Farley and document it.
You talk about chewing up a disk drive.
Yeah, put my... Well, you know,
think about this, right? The discs go round and round. The wheels on your bike go round and round. You're capturing. Oh, God, we're getting sidetracked already.
You've definitely inspired me here. I do have a little
handlebar
mount. Yes.
Don't tell me you got the little bell on the handlebar with the little frizzly things coming off the handlebars. What are those? The little streamers?
I've removed all non-mission critical equipment from my bicycle.
Oh, I like that. No, okay, but it is a dual redundant bike.
I have two wheels, yes.
There you go. Outstanding.
Well, it's funny because I took off the kickstand and I don't have a bell. When I pass somebody, I say beep, beep. I just say beep, beep because I don't have
not
a bell
cool, like,
or anything.
Passing on your left, on your right, or any of that stuff.
Well, people always got them flipping iPods up in their ear or something.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, so what's the point? Why carry a bell if they're not going to hear me?
So you got to come up with some cool techno geekno gadget. That, you know, like if you put your cell phone near an iPod, you hear that like, right? So,
well, yeah, if I could get my phone loud enough, I'd just say Droid, you know.
Yeah, Droid. I mean, but yeah, that's what somebody needs is come up with like an iPod jammer.
Or, iPod blocker, iBlocker.
iPod blocker, iPod jammer, you are about to be run over.
I'll take it. Well, hey, Greg, I've known you for a while, and a lot of people out there know you, but could you just give the quick elevator pitch of you and your analyst group and service, the Greg Schulz Storage.io, if you will? Tell everybody.
Yeah, Storage.io. So that's my main site, Storage.io.com, or also known as Storage.io. Mm-hmm. But Storage.io.com, blog is Storage.io, blog.com, Twitter is at Storage.io. And basically, Storage.io has been around for about 5.5 years. Before that, I worked for an analyst firm for a couple years. Before that, I was in the vendor community, like what you're doing. It sounds like a similar path. In other words, I actually started out on the customer side working in IT organizations. Then I went and worked in the vendor community for a number of years. Then worked for the analyst and then started my own firm. So kind of some similar paths, having been the customer, having been the vendor, the analyst, and now I'm a combination. I do some consulting, I do advisory work and write books and speak engagements, all kinds of fun stuff, plus a lot of really, really cool consulting activities. The coolest stuff is under NDA, so unfortunately I can't talk about the really, really cool stuff.
Sure, sure. Well, and you know, I think that your path that you enumerated there, that's really the best way to go. You get all the different perspectives, and sure, the technologies will change, but you have to put yourself in each of those roles to really absorb the thought process and be able to communicate both ways. You know, what is the customer needs? Well, it's a lot easier to identify that if you have been a customer, that type of thing.
Rick, that's a great perspective in that if you've been the customer, you'll think like a customer. If you've been a vendor, you'll think like a vendor. If you've been both, then you understand, if you're that vendor, you can understand how to communicate and relate that oftentimes that messaging of the vendor isn't relating one-to-one with that customer. The best vendors, the most successful ones, is they figure out how to bridge that gap between their engineering marketing organizations, which think the message is this, to that of the customer, whom the message just might need to be twisted, adjusted, maybe even inversed a little bit. So, you know, you've been in that role, so it's almost like speaking different languages at times.
Well, I look at it two ways. I call it FUDBuster. Okay, that's what I call it. and that's really another way to put it is simply just look at how credible some of the independent bloggers are. You know, because they've got that perspective, real world, they can talk peer-to-peer, customer-to-customer, and those perspectives, and you can't shake it, you know, wherever you're at, you know, you always reflect your perspectives, but I have to use the FUD garden of FUD busters to be able to see all these different perspectives, and that's why I talk to good, smart folk like you. And one of the things I want to talk about is, you know, hard drives. You know, your primary focus is storage, but as you know, storage touches everything now, virtualization, servers, and you know, don't even say cloud yet. But you know, let's take a look at what's out there right now today. And I was poking around looking for my home. I have a small iSCSI target, and I don't need more space. I need more performance at home. Okay, I've got plenty of terabytes, but as you know, it's not about size. It's about, you know, IOPS and you know, drive performance metrics. But one of the things that I'm getting a little bit concerned about is that in general rotational media, I'm worried if they're just getting too big. Well, what do you think of that?
Rick, we would have had the same conversation 10 years ago, because go back 10 plus years now. And this conversation is something that pops up every, I don't want to say generation, but at least decade or so, because we go back around that 10, 12 year mark, these giant, huge, 3.5 inch, which were at the time very, very small, because you'd just come off the 5.25 inch drives. Mm-hmm. These big 9 gig drives were appearing. Well, what's around the corner? 9 terabyte drives are a couple of years out. They're not that far out. So right now we're like, ooh, wow, these 1-2 terabyte drives. Oh my God, they're too big. Yeah. Well, guess what? They will get bigger. Now, here's what's happening. You know, there's a lot. You talked about the hype, the FUD busting, that the disk drive is dead. Yeah, right. The disk drive is 55 plus years old. It has qualified for AARP for the last 5 years and keeps ripping up and shredding the invites to join the AARP club because it's got a lot of life in front of it. But here's the thing. Its role is absolutely changing and evolving. And you touched on it. What's happening is that certainly, you know, solid state has been around for a couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And it comes and goes. It gets hot for a while, then it cools off. And with the emergence of flash, both SLC single level cell, MLC multi-level cell, and phase change looks promising. And there's a lot of really cool stuff that's out there, MRAM, different things like that. But the price performance is becoming more and more reasonable, where ironically, solid state is not going to kill the disk drive off. It's going to keep it around by offloading. You talked like, you know, supporting more IOPS and things like that. So you're seeing this already with more pure solid state drives, flash drives going in to even laptops where you have more solid state persistent memory in addition to your dynamic RAM memory and then a bigger hard drive. Or I've got them in all my laptops now. What I think are the really cool things is the hybrid hard drives. In other words, like the Seagate Momentus XT, where you have I've got a 500 gig, 7200 RPM SATA drive, and it has 4 gig of SLC flash, with, 32 meg of DRAM on it, okay? So it's the best of both worlds. In other words, yeah, I'd love to put in a 500 gig, solid state drive. Yeah, that's what I'd want, but I need more than a 500 gig, 7200 RPM drive. Excuse me. Because it's that combination of I need, for some things, lots of capacity. For other things, I need very, very fast performance, but I don't need fast performance all the time.
Well, I mean, I like to call that, you know, in the case of on a laptop, unit tiering, okay? You're tiering at the individual unit of the drive, which for like a laptop, that's the way to go. We can't really do that same approach in shared storage systems, can we?
Why not? Here's what's interesting is you have one part of the market focused on killing the hard drive so that their new products can actually become more viable and affordable, okay? Mm-hmm. Because as long as the 1-2, the 4s, you know, the additional capacity drives, as long as they're out there, and that's where the drive is going to stick around for a long time, Rick, is in that high-capacity role, which is where it's suited. It's like tape. Tape's role is shifted to being that great archive medium as opposed to dumping your data right to it. The disk is helping keep the tape around. Solid state is offloading and enabling I/O consolidation, where the hard drive is enabling capacity consolidation.
Okay.
So you think of it that way. And you know, the metaphor is that there are some that say that, well, tiering doesn't apply to a desktop or a laptop. Yes, it does. Absolutely. But how you do it goes about differently. But think about this way for a minute. You know, so you're involved a lot with data protection, backup, restore, things like that.
Yep.
So the focus has been high capacity drives. Then, well, now you got to reduce that footprint. So different data footprint reduction techniques, compression, dedupe, thin provisioning, all those great tools that are part of the DFR data footprint reduction toolbox. Okay. But then it's like, well, how can we use solid state to it? Well, let's use solid state, but it's, you know, price capacity for backup dumping. It's okay, so we got to do all these tricks that sometimes offset each other. Well, what if you were to take a, say, a 500 gig or maybe a 1 terabyte hybrid drive comes along that has I/O consolidation that fits somewhere between a classic hard drive and a solid state drive, okay? And then hypothetically, what if you were to put, say, 12 of those type drives in a shelf in a behind a controller, where now you've got all this disk capacity, you've got all that built-in flash capacity, mm-hmm. and then all you have to do is set up a controller that stripes across it. Guess what? It's going to ingest backups. It's going to ingest snapshots very, very quickly. And then as they cool off, there's no need to move the data around.
And that's all handled at the drive level. So
it would be handled at the drive and using existing controllers. But here's the catch. Why won't you see anything like that in the what I'll call the mid to upper end of the SMB or even the enterprise space for a while? Because the vendors are so focused on where they've invested the last couple of years, on their controllers, on their software for mm-hmm. moving things around. In other words, doing the disk drive disco footstep shuffle.
Gotcha. Right. And that's okay. that's a solution outside of their investment. So
it is. It okay. is. So to some of them, they don't see, they got the blinders on where they're not seeing that opportunity of doing something. And when I was initially over a year ago playing with some of these hybrid drives, I found out is I started out using them, Rick, initially for protecting my hard, in other words, for doing my dumps, but mm-hmm. for doing my snapshots, for doing large file transfers. And what I was amazed at is I'd be doing 4 gig transfers, and boom, that data would go right into that buffer, and then after that, they'd cool down. You know, classic scratch area, dump space, backup mm-hmm. target. And I didn't need that performance for those individual files after that unless I needed to restore from them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that classic of having enough performance to get the protection done. So I think it's an interesting area where, again, this is too often with technology, you go back to the hype or the FUD buster, is something is positioned as a threat or as competitive, and maybe look at it the other way is, wait a minute, how can it be an enabler? How can it complement? How can it make something else even cooler, more robust?
How is that going to play with, like, RAID technology? Simply put, I was talking to Klaus Mikkelsen from HDS, and he thinks in the quote-unquote near term, but, you know, the storage guys live in the future anyways, but he sees 50 terabyte SATA drives.
And, absolutely,
and
absolutely.
RAID isn't going to be enough for that type of stuff.
Well, here's the thing. We had the same discussion. I've talked with Klaus about it, and I think I gave him a headache because he go back to when the 9 gig drives came out. It was a big concern was, how are we ever going to rebuild a 9 gig drive? Well, there are some vendors, and for whatever reason, they don't want to talk publicly about it. Maybe they're embarrassed or whatever, but some of them can actually rebuild a 1 or 2 terabyte drive today as fast, if not faster, than they could a 9 gigabyte drive 10 years ago.
Well, we have a much better backplane.
You've got a combination. You got back.
Yeah.
You've got processor speeds.
Yeah.
You've got more memory. You've got better algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well,
but
right.
there's a catch there, which is if your window was X number of hours 10 years ago, well, the good news is you can now do magnitudes more data in that same window. But the challenge is those windows are shrinking. So that's why we're going to see a combination, enhanced RAIDs, new RAID levels, new distributed protection techniques, better predictive, because mm-hmm. a lot of rebuilds, a lot of drive rebuilds, particularly on the SATA type drives, have actually been what we'll call false or artificial rebuilds.
Well, and that's a good point, because one of the things that I've learned over the years is that an individual traditional rotational media, I don't want to call it RAID, but there's parity algorithm on the sectors, right? So
absolutely,
there's errors that can occur, but the drive firmware can protect against that type of stuff, and when a certain threshold hits, depending on the controller, then they can flag predictive, and then there's, you know, absolute failure of the drive.
Well, and in some cases, if we go back a few years, there were some products that were they were a little too conservative in their predictive capabilities, which was a good thing. They were being very, very proactive, but the net result was that in that overcautious flagging drives as this drive is about to fail. But it may been a little too overreactive. It's a fine balancing point between being overcautious and you know, being caught short. But we're, you know, there's the other aspect which I mentioned, Rick, which is RAID algorithms improving, new RAID levels, processors, backplanes, all these different things. You know, there's another piece that plays into all of this, which is your best practices, your design choices and trade-offs. I mean, think about it. You have in front of you buttons, knobs, dials, GUIs, UIs, wizards, all these things you can play with. Okay? But what are you going to do? In other words, when should you be using a 2 terabyte SATA drive versus a different type drive, and what RAID level should you be using? In other words, if you are trying to go for the absolute lowest cost possible, forget about quality of service, reliability. Okay, well, let's see. How about RAID 5 over as many low-cost SATA drives as you can get?
Yeah, but you're...
Well, it's a design trade-off, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, wait a minute. If you're concerned about that drive rebuild time, take the step back and look at things. One, should you maybe be using a different type of SATA drive, maybe an enterprise class versus the $58 class? Maybe you should be buying the $120 version of it versus a $80 version of it. There could be a difference. If they're the same part number, that's one thing. But look at the make sure they're actually the same. But look at the different grades, because there are different qualities testing duty cycles.
Sure.
And then also look at the configuration.
Well, right. And the problem is too many times, and, you know, to put my mind inside of Joe Admin. Joe Admin has a dollar amount that he didn't decide, he or she didn't decide on what that needs to be purchased this year. And they have a terabyte of usable space requirement. And unfortunately, those two metrics kind of determine what they purchase. And then we're always dealt with the applications or craplications, as they were, where we don't have the IOPS or information, or we don't have their IO needs. It's a tough challenge to really do it right. And I, you know, there's no silver bullet strategy other than to know what your options are.
Well, that's a key point, Rick, is understand what your options are and what to use when and where. And, you know, the enemy here is it's not the vendors, it's not the technology, it's not the customers, it's not the VAR. The enemy is the metric dollar per gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
That's the enemy, because that is what will drive Joe Admin or Jane Admin to make a decision, because somebody higher up and says, look, here is the price per gigabyte because we saw the ad for Amazon or Yahoo or
Best Buy
or whatever, you know. Yeah. Or my brother-in-law, Fred, came over and said during a barbecue after 25 Budweisers that we're paying too much per gigabyte. Oh, by the way, he also stayed at a Holiday Inn Express the night before.
I've been effectively thrown out of an office and the quote ripped up in front of me for buying what I thought would be the best tier and class of storage for an application, a large application, based on the no information I had, and I didn't pick the budget amount. So we've all been there, and it's tough.
Oh, absolutely. And again, we talked earlier about, you know, if you've been on the customer side, you may have been on the receiving side of it from one form or the other. Mm-hmm. If you've been on the vendor side, you may either be on the receiving or the impact side. I mean, think of it this way. If you're a vendor and you've got to make your numbers and the customer's got a fixed budget, mm-hmm. If your boss is Monty Hall, how are you going to make the deal for that quarter?
Bad visual.
You're going to grab some 2 terabyte drives, meet their capacity need, configure it in a RAID 5 or a RAID 6 to meet their availability needs, and voila, you met the budget and you're a hero. So, hey, you didn't win that set of steak knives for the quarter.
Well, and the worst thing that can happen with simply going by dollars per terabyte is that in the 10% utilized realm, things will be okay. You know.
Well, and again, this is that vicious circle.
Yeah.
Is that, okay, so why is storage underallocated? Well, lack of IOPS. Okay, so you either bite the bullet and you buy where needed. You buy a two small capacity solid state drives. Why two? Because you're going to mirror them. Why? It's not if they fail, it's when they fail.
Right.
Okay, but you're going to concentrate your IO. So you buy a pair of them, mirror them. You're going to consolidate those IOPS there. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to put everything else on your higher capacity. It's part of that tiering. It's part of that that basic allocation, the best practices.
Yeah, and a lot of times we have to tier without, controller-driven solutions. You know, we might
have individual
controllers that are faster than others. And honestly, that's a better domain of failure when you can spread across controllers. Okay.
Here's the thing: in the controller base, the automation is cool, but you're introducing another technology. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the technology that fails; it's the people intervention, how it's configured or how it's not configured. All these different pieces that come to play. But, where it comes back to is this vicious cycle, which is you configure for performance, you end up with under-allocated storage. Somebody says, fill it up. What happens? You fill up that space, and you got a performance bottleneck. Well, the vicious cycle starts again. Mm-hmm. So what it comes down to, Rick, is find and fix the problems, which is I/O consolidate where possible, storage capacity consolidate where practical. What does that mean is a mix of different type drives and different types of media.
Awesome.
Archive where possible across the board. And, Rick, we've got to start a cause here. We have to rescue archive from the compliance people who hijacked it 10 years ago.
Well,
because archive before that, it was a classic tool. You want to speed up a database? Archive. You want to speed up a file system? Archive. You want to speed up backups? Archive. You want to speed up your email backups? Archive.
I could go either way on that. I don't know.
We got to rescue it.
Okay. That'll be the next time you're on the podcast is the archive,
yep.
The archive revival.
Of course.
And
because then we can make it backups. We can make backups run faster, and I'm sure you'd like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about fast backups, that's for sure. Well, hey, Greg, you have got such good stuff, and you definitely have a golden ticket onto this podcast again. But
cool.
I do want to transition to the next segment of my podcast, and that's my little gimmick called Three Views from You. So I'm going to ask you the first question based in your past. At some point in your past tech or work or otherwise experience, what's the coolest technology story that you can share or experience that's happened in your past?
Coolest. I got to ride in the cockpit of an Airbus A320 from Germany to France, and what was cool about it was a digital cockpit. What geek wouldn't like that?
Oh, sweet. That's right. You're a Flyboy fan just like myself. Awesome.
Exactly.
So was it a revenue commercial airline? You don't have to say the airline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Cool.
And it was pre-9/11. So pre-9/11, you could actually ride jump seat, for example, in Europe.
Awesome.
So I got to ride jump seat. It was a blast.
Awesome. Was it so when you say digital, you mean like a glass cockpit then?
Yeah, it was a glass cockpit.
Sweet.
And then there was another time I got to ride front seat in a helicopter, and the pilot, he looked at me and says, whatever you do, don't touch those pedals or I'll break the legs.
Yeah, I'd be a little wiggly about getting up in a chopper myself. Now,
I tell you, the chopper part was cool because I did another chopper ride. We're up in by Mount McKinley, and we got to go up above the cloud layer, and the pilot just said simply, look, we're not running oxygen masks here. The first person who laughs, giggles, or says something stupid, we're going back down to thicker air.
Right. Got to keep it, keep the heart rate down. Yeah,
yep,
for sure.
Exactly. So that was pretty cool.
Awesome. How about right now? What do you have the most passion in right now, technology-wise?
Well, as you can tell, I'm pretty jazzed. I'm pretty excited about like the hybrid drives, but this whole idea of how these different technologies come together, how they fit together. So, certainly the hybrid drives, because again, they brings different things together and pretty cool. I'm wrapping up a new book, which will actually be on the shelves in less than a month. Called Cloud and Virtual Data Storage Networking. So that brings together a lot of different themes. Metrics. Metrics matter because it gives you that insight of what's going on, where have you been, how are you going to get there, how are you going to navigate your way to the future.
Cloud and Virtual Storage Networking.
Absolutely. We're going to, at one extreme, you got the FUD, at the other extreme, you got the hype, and in between, there's reality.
Rock on. What's the ETA on that?
It's slated for an August 1st release, so hopefully we'll be within a day or two of that, if not spot on.
How about, do you plan on Kindle format?
Yes, it will be on Kindle.
Awesome.
And I believe, don't hold me to this, but I think the first public, live, in-person, where it'll be on the shelves will be at VMworld.
Rock on. I definitely will catch up with you there. And I'll talk to you offline about it, but I'd love to get that as an option for the Veeam featured webinars. On our, here's a Veeam plug. We have the Veeam featured webinars that people are welcome to attend. They're held approximately weekly. I do some of them. Doug Hazelman does some of them, and we give away books at the end of the webinars, and we've just expanded the selection, which basically we have to keep the price under a certain dollar amount, and the Kindle format has really helped us do that. So I think we have like 8 or 9 different choices now, including some print options, but check out Veeam.com and look for the featured webinars, and hopefully you can see Greg's book coming up in the future.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
How about in the future, Greg? What do you see coming down the pike technology-wise that you're most interested in?
You know, the one that's kind of got I'm keeping an eye on are microservers. Mm-hmm. You know, we think about the big high-performance, high-density blades. You know, everything's all big, cool, right? I'm intrigued by these microservers, Rick. In other words, they're the small. They look like a PCIe card.
Yep.
They've got maybe only 1 or 2 cores. They're slower cores, less memory, but it's all about being able to have your own physical server in a small footprint, but in a shared, hosted, managed service, cloud-type environment, but it's your own physical server, the best of both worlds. So the microservers I'm intrigued by because it also opens up the door for a lot of other things. So yeah. Certainly those I'm watching. On the memory side, phase change memory, MRAM, a lot of cool things happening there. And then there's some really, really cool stuff that are behind the locked doors that I think some of them are going to see the light of day, and people are going to go like, wow, this is really cool. And others are going to say, oh, wow, this is deja vu.
Rock on. Well, I'm a Mr. Stuff appreciator as well, so I'm definitely down with those small servers, the blade servers, cloud servers, you know, all that different, those new architectures. That's awesome. Well, hey, let's wrap it up. And everyone, if you didn't catch it earlier, Greg is on Twitter at StorageIO. And he also is at StorageIO.com and the StorageIOblog.com. And other than that, Greg, hey, thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Rick, my pleasure. Hey, and by the way, congratulations on your vExpert nomination and being awarded.
Well, same to you as well, of course.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, hey, guys, that's a wrap.